Imagine if a ring could actually give you the power of insight into your own health. The Oura Ring is a real-world ring of power, designed to help you take control of your well-being. I've worn an Oura Ring every day for years, and it's truly become essential. Now with the brand new Oura Ring 4, this smart ring goes even further. It doesn't just track steps, it reveals insights about your sleep, activity, recovery, stress, and more. All literally at your fingertips. Paired with an Oura membership, it's like having a powerful personal wellness guide on your finger, giving you the power to be healthier every day. Claim this ring of power for yourself. Visit ringspodcast.com/ring and order your Oura Ring 4 today. That's ringspodcast.com/ring to claim your Oura Ring of Power. As Frodo and friends walk into the flickering lights of the prancing pony, they're not just entering an inn. They're stepping into a crossroads of stories, secrets, and strangers. Today, we follow them into Bree, a village that remembers Middle-earth's deepest histories and holds secrets that may shape Middle-earth's destiny. This is Lore of the Rings. I'm Aaron, your host and guide to wandering Middle-earth. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't get lost in your wandering. Now, let's wander. My fellow wanderer, it has been a few weeks since we were in a chapter from the Fellowship of the Ring. We've been doing reviews of Rings of Power and guest interviews and all sorts of other things, so I think it's worthwhile for us to check the map. These map checks are inspired by the beautiful maps that accompany the Lord of the Rings books, and I hope give you the context for today's tale. It is the Third Age of Middle-earth. Frodo Baggins knows that he carries Sauron's one ring, and in an attempt to save the Shire, has left the Shire behind on his way to meet Gandalf in the village of Bree. Being pursued by black riders, Frodo and his friends left the road and traveled through the Old Forest, where they met old Tom Bombadil and his lady, Goldberry. After saving the hobbits from a haunting sacrifice, Tom has led them back to the road, and potentially back to danger from being pursued by the black riders. We pick up with the hobbits on the road as they make their way into Bree in Chapter 9 of Fellowship of the Ring at the Sign of the Prancing Pony. The chapter opens by Tolkien giving us quite a bit of background and story and even a little bit of geography and description of the peoples that live in the village of Bree. The people that live in Bree can fall under three categories: the big folk of Bree, the little folk of Bree, and the mysterious rangers. The big folk of Bree are mortal men, they are humans, and there's an allusion to the deep history of Middle-earth, going back to the First Age, because the men of Bree were descended from those first men who came over the mountains from the eastern side. That's a legend that comes into the First Age of Middle-earth, and we've covered that before in previous episodes. But the men of Bree were also still there during the Second Age, or at the end of the Second Age, quote, "When the kings returned again over the Great Sea, they had found the Bree men still there. And they were still there now, when the memory of the old kings had faded into grass." So not only do we have an allusion to the First Age of Middle-earth, the history of men coming over the mountains from the east, but also an allusion to the Second Age of Middle-earth, the Numenorean kings coming back over the sea. The second people that are mentioned about Bree are the mysterious rangers, and I find it no coincidence that right when we learn about the kings coming back from over the sea and the people from Bree still being there, that the very next idea that Tolkien's going to describe are the rangers. Now, there is a connection there. The rangers are descended from the Dúnedain, the last remnant of the Numenorean kings in Middle-earth. But that connection has not yet been revealed to us in this chapter, but I find it no coincidence that Tolkien mentions kings, and then we go right into the mysterious rangers. The rangers are quite a bit different from the men of Bree. The men of Bree are short and cheerful and independent. They're almost like just big hobbits, if you will, almost as if Bree were just an extension of the Shire. I know it's actually the other way around, that the Shire is the colony of Bree, but it's almost as if the big folk of Bree are just big hobbits, even though it says that they are rather short, but they are really cheerful, merry type of a people, as opposed to the rangers, who are not merry. They are dark, they're mysterious, they're pretty grim, they're a lot taller and darker, and also that it's said that they have strange powers of sight and hearing. So you have this contrast: the men of Bree, short, cheerful, almost like they're big hobbits, life-size hobbits, if you will. And then you have the rangers, who are quite a bit different. And then the third category of people here in Bree are, of course, the little folk, the hobbits. These hobbits claim to have the oldest settlement of hobbits anywhere in the world, and that's likely very true. In fact, they call the Shire the colony. and anybody who comes from the Shire is a colonist. But the big folk and the little folk seem to live in harmony with one another. I don't know if harmony is quite the right word for it. It's more like a unity. They view themselves, as it says, quote, as necessary parts of the Bree folk, each of them, the big folk and the little folk. But I'm reminded just a few chapters back when we looked at Tom Bombadil and Goldberry, how they were literally two opposite beings who complemented one another perfectly, that their opposite natures blended together in a perfect, complete harmony. That, to me, sounds like much more of a complementary nature, rather than the big folk and the little folk here, which they do seem to be necessary parts to create a unity of Bree, but not quite like Tom and Goldberry. And the last thing to mention about the setup of Bree is that the very last line of this section, quote, there was Bree blood in the Brandybucks by all accounts. Why is that important to mention? Because if you remember all the way back in Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 of Fellowship of the Ring, in Chapter 1, Sam's talking with a few other hobbits in another pub, and one of them says that Frodo is more than half a Brandybuck, so Frodo has some really deep connections with the Brandybucks. I think also in Chapter 2, I think it's Lobelia Saxville Baggins complains about how Frodo is more Brandybuck than he is Baggins and shouldn't have been the inheritor of all of Bilbo's property. But for all of that, Frodo is connected very closely with the Brandybucks, and the Brandybucks are very closely connected with Bree. So therefore, trouble is in the waters if Frodo, if some of his family connections start to ask around and get rather curious. So there's a little bit of a setup for some drama there. We move on a little bit, and Tolkien tells us that there's a deep dike with a thick hedge around the village of Bree. There's no defensive wall. We'll touch on that more in just a second. But more importantly, quote, Bree stood at an old meeting of ways. Another ancient road crossed the East Road just outside the dike at the western end of the village. So Bree literally sits at this major intersection. You have the North-South Road, which was the main connection, the main lifeblood between the North Kingdom of Arnor and the South Kingdom of Gondor during the beginning part of the Third Age. And then you've got this major east-west road that that Bilbo and Thorin and the dwarves took on their way from the Shire to the Lonely Mountain. So Bree sits right there at this little intersection. And before we go on into this chapter, I have a few interesting tidbits from some other resources about Bree that I think will really deepen your appreciation of what this place is. In a letter that Tolkien penned in 1955, he revealed a little of his creative process. He was answering a question about how much of this story of the Lord of the Rings was all in his mind, was masterfully planned out when he wrote The Hobbit, and was there any connection in his mind when he was writing The Hobbit? As part of that answer, he said, quote, I met a lot of things on the way that astonished me. Tom Bombadil I knew already, but I had never been to Bree. So this reveals Tolkien's writing style. He might have some high-level idea of where he thinks the story is going to go. He also has these languages and these characters and these places that sort of percolate in his mind all of the time. But when he sits down to write, these things just sort of flow out of him. Clearly, there's no mention of Bree in The Hobbit, at least in the published versions that we have today. There's no mention of Bree, which is odd because when you look at Karen Wynn Fonstad's The Atlas of Middle-earth, Bilbo and Thorin, because they're following the east-west road, they actually camp right inside of Bree on May the 4th, and yet there's no mention of that in The Hobbit, because in Tolkien's mind, Bree had not yet manifested. It hadn't revealed itself to him yet. But when it comes time for him to write The Lord of the Rings, boom, all of a sudden, there's Bree. Tolkien also mentioned a few other things that were revealed to him at Bree. We'll get to that in the next episode. But I do want to put this drafting into perspective just a little bit, because Tolkien had been working on The Lord of the Rings for decades. And in another letter that he wrote in 1960, he claimed that, quote, The Lord of the Rings was actually begun as a separate thing about 1937 and had reached the inn at Bree before the shadow of the Second War. So that would be World War II. So you can kind of see Tolkien is writing this story. He's coming off the success of The Hills of the Hobbit that was published, I think it was 1936 or 37, somewhere in there. He's starting to work on The Lord of the Rings, the sequel to The Hobbit. They've gotten all the way to Bree by the time that the Second World War bursts and breaks out. By the way, I highly recommend the revised and expanded edition of The Letters of J.R.R. Tolkien. I'll drop a link to purchase that down in the show notes and in the description, so you can go ahead and find that, as well as the Atlas of Middle-earth and a few other resources I'll be sharing with you today. Like this one right here, The Making of Middle-earth, this beautiful book. Now, I want to go back to a detail, and we sort of glazed over it really quickly, but Bree does not have a defensive wall around its outside. It has a dike with a thick hedge at the top. And that detail might seem insignificant. You might just skip over it. In fact, I think in Peter Jackson's films, they actually did build a defensive wall for Bree. But this detail, while you could easily miss it, is actually pretty important. And it's important because it adds to the historicity and the verisimilitude of the Lord of the Rings. Okay, so what do I mean by that? Well, in this book, The Making of Middle-earth says, quote, "There were many dikes in England built as boundary markers and or for defensive purposes early in the Middle Ages." So what does that mean? Tolkien is a medievalist. He knows his history. And one of his primary motivations for writing The Lord of the Rings was to create and generate and provide a land of England with its own mythological founding, its own mythos. When you get a little detail like this, dikes from ancient England as boundary markers or defensive lines, Bree is around a dike, what Tolkien is really subtly doing is he's grounding the land of Bree in the real world. He wanted us to feel like the story of the Lord of the Rings happened in our world, on our planet. Yes, a different time. Yes, powers of magic being something different than what they are now, but grounded in our world. In another letter, he claimed that the Shire and the land round about it was actually England, right? That it was the northwestern corner of Europe. Not that all Middle Earth is actually Europe. At least that little corner of the Shire was supposed to be England. And by extension, Bree. Bree is right there, right nearby. So that little detail just adds to the feeling that this is a real story, that it has some historical significance, and it grounds us. And it's little details like that that we may not even pick up on, but are very subtle clues to our collective unconscious to remind us that this is a story in a real place, and that these characters, at least for Tolkien, were very, very real.
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.
When fandom is about community, so are we. Whether you're watching blockbuster fantasy like The Lord of the Rings or cozying up with your favorite comic book, the Lorehounds are here as your guides to great stories. Search for the Lorehounds in any podcast feed or head to our website, thelorehounds.com, to find links to all our conversations, whether on air or with listeners on our Discord server. See you this fall for weekly coverage of Dune Prophecy and Silo.
Okay, so that's the macro setting of Bree. I want to zoom in a little bit more onto the micro setting, the Inn of the Prancing Pony. So as the hobbits come in, you know, they go through the gate, you get that great line, "Hobbits, four hobbits, what's more out of the Shire, brother talk?" Lifted straight out of this chapter, put into Peter Jackson's film. As the hobbits start to get closer to the inn, Sam is so scared. There's all of these tall windows, tall buildings all around that are in windows, and he just imagines there's a black rider in every single window. So Sam is such a provincial hobbit. He's so inexperienced with the wide, wide world that to him, these tall buildings and all of their windows, they are just as scary to him as meeting a black rider out on the road. Now, these black riders have been pretty scary. They've been pursuing the hobbits for the last few days. And so I just find it funny that Sam thinks that this tall inn, the Prancing Pony, is just as scary as several black riders in every single window. An interesting thing here, as we come to the Prancing Pony, you know, Tolkien describes it as sort of a meeting place, quote, "for the idle, talkative, and inquisitive among the inhabitants, a resort of rangers and other wanderers." In some ways, it's not unlike the pub scene that opened up The Lord of the Rings, where Sam and Sandyman and the gaffer are going kind of back and forth about a lot of different things. And then you have the innkeeper, Barleyman Butterbur, who is a very talkative host, but he is also very accommodating. He's very busy. He's very forgetful. As soon as he does get the hobbits settled, he invites them to come back into the common room for what he says, quote, "a bit of news or any story or song that you have in mind." Little does he know that he's going to get all three. But before the Hobbits actually go back to the common room, Sam's fears are quickly put to rest as the good beer and good plain food is put out on the table. And in good Hobbit-like fashion, with his belly full and a mug full of beer, he certainly feels at home right again within the little accommodations of the inn. And I should also say, it's interesting to note that Barleyman here, he's very busy, he's very frazzled, he's very forgetful. The inn is very full tonight. And Barleyman even mentioned to the Hobbits, it's a good thing that they were Hobbits, because those were the only accommodations that he had left available to him. Little Hobbit-sized holes that were sort of on the ground floor, built into the side of the hill, little round windows to help the Hobbits feel at home. All of the rest of his accommodations are filled up. The stables are filled up, the rooms are filled up. Barleyman, there's a lot of chaos going on around Barleyman right now. This whole inn is full. If the inn hadn't been so full on that particular night, would Barleyman have been as frazzled and forgetful as he was? He has some very important secrets and information that he needs to share with Frodo. Remember, Frodo thinks that he's going to meet Gandalf here at Bree. That was the whole goal. Get from the Shire to Bree to meet Gandalf. We know that that's not going to happen. And Barleyman knows some of that information that he has to pass along to Frodo, but he's too busy, he's too frazzled, and he doesn't get to that. So would the Lord of the Rings been a little bit different if the inn weren't so full and chaotic and busy tonight? Maybe so. But maybe it happened just the way it needed to happen. And I just want to zoom in and zoom out a little bit here. So you have Bree, this village. It's at the intersection of the North-South Road, the East-West Road. Within Bree, there's one main meeting place. That is the Inn of the Prancing Pony. And then you come in just a little bit tighter into the common room of the Inn of the Prancing Pony. This is the meeting place, and everyone is here. You've got the big folk from Bree. You've got little folk from Bree. You've got at least one mysterious ranger that we'll get to in the next episode. There's a handful of dwarves. There's even a company of strangers that came up from the south that day. This common room, what Tolkien has done is he takes this great big meeting place and he slowly, in concentric circles, brings it down into this tiny little micro setting of the common room of the Prancing Pony. And again, it's full. You have this eclectic mix of everybody there. It's essentially the melting pot of Middle Earth right now in the common room at the Inn of the Prancing Pony. With just a little bit of pressure, a melting pot will boil over. But we'll get to that next time. Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, then head to ringspodcast.com/member and find a membership that's right for you. And as always, thank you for wandering Middle Earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Shop early, save big, all month long during Black Friday Buildup at Lowe's. Right now, get select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at just $59.98. Don't wait to save. Shop these deals today, in-store or online. Because Lowe's knows deals. Discount taken at time of purchase while supplies last. Selection varies by location.